Log Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Samir Quinn, taking you to 12:30, the next 60 minutes, as we discuss the world of sports. I'm glad the Olympics are almost about one day from being over. Despite the fact that they're taking place in one of the dead months of the sports calendar, in February, where, you know, people are talking high-level baseball, you know, NFL draft, dog days of college basketball, dog days of the NBA. Despite those particular advantages that you think the Olympics would have, the Olympics have been just awful. I mean, they haven't been able to get anything right. They can't even get the snow. They can't even get the snow on the courses, right? In order to have, you know, in order for these kids to be able to run, you know, clean races. Can't get that right. You have the Canadian women's hockey team, basically, you know, drinking on the ice after winning a gold medal. You know, you have Lindsey Vonn and her disaster. She can't finish the race. She's on the cover of Sports Illustrated twice in the last month. You know, first time the U.S. best U.S. women's skier ever. Like there's a who's list of U.S. women skiers. Even a diehard sports expert knows the greatest women skiers of all time. I mean, come on. So these Olympics, to me, have been nothing short of an utter disaster. And of course, you had the start of it, the tragic death of the luge, who died tragically. That was almost a precursor of what of things to come. As far as what these Olympics have been. But the one thing now you have coming up on Sunday, especially if you're an American, that can kind of leave a sweet taste in your mouth, is the fact that the USA hockey team first came out of nowhere and got to the gold medal game. They will take on Canada tomorrow, again, around 3:15. Canada, of course, will be heavily favored in that game. You know, on their home ice, they have the best players. You know, they are the more physical of the two teams. But listen, anybody will be surprised if the U.S. goes out there and beats Canada to win the gold medal. 30 years ago, of course, you had the miracle on ice. This is not even comparisons to that. I mean, if the USA were to win. This game, it would be out of an upset, but it doesn't compare to that. That was a great upset in the history of sports. But again, the USA has kind of taken a page out of the book of, you know, and I'm comparing it to basketball, of some European basketball teams. I mean, not getting all the superstars, getting some very good players, but guys who, number one, want to be there, number one. And getting guys who understand their roles and who play their roles to a T. I mean, they don't have a bunch of prima donnas. I mean, I bet you could name one guy on that USA team is a top 10 player in hockey. Maybe a top 20. Not counting the goalies. Now, they do have excellent goaltenders. I mean, they have guys, you know, Ryan Miller, Tim Thomas, top-notch goaltenders. There's no question about that. But, you know, you look at some of these names. I mean, you know, Brooks Orpik and Ryan Malone and Chris Drury and Ryan Parise. I mean, these are not household NHL names to a casual sports fan. You know all the names. But these guys, you know, again, are blue collar guys who, you know, outworked their opponent, and they've really dominated this tournament. I mean, ever since USA toys with Finland yesterday, they beat Finland 6-1, scored 6 goals in the first basically 13 minutes of the game, and after that, just put on cruise control and then went from there. I mean, they could have named their score in that game. It could have been 15. It could have been 15-1. But they kind of took their foot off the pedal, and it's a great story. I mean, USA. You know, USA came in, all the Ovechkin talk, all the Crosby talk, you know, Swiss of teams, you know, talking, all the talk people out there, the Swiss team from Sweden and all the, you know, all these other countries, but USA kind of went under the radar, and again, they have simply dominated this tournament. Or Canada goes in as a favorite on their home ice. I think they have, I mean, the pressure that Canada has on it is ridiculous. Anything ridiculous, anything less than a gold medal is a failure. They might as well not even got to this game. Okay, they might as well not even got to this game if they're gonna go out there tomorrow and lose to the USA. So it should be a great game. Again, I would encourage anybody to watch, even if you're not a hockey fan. I mean, I know you got Lakers Denver tomorrow, but dig it, you'll see Lakers at Denver about 2.5 months from now. You know, you have a chance to see those two teams go at it 6 or 7 times. So I definitely would encourage you to watch that game. It'll be alive. The crowd will be crazy. The American crowd, despite the fact that the game is in Vancouver, you have Americans there. They will be the American fan base will be well represented in that crowd, amongst that crowd. Trust me, we'll find the scalpers. That's what we do as American fans who want to get to games. We'll find the scalpers, buy some tickets, and go out there and have fun. You know, as they try to move the U.S. or USA on to victory. But again, I would not be surprised if the USA won that game. And yeah, I mean, you need something to kind of cap off this Olympics in a positive note. Everything has gone wrong. Everything that can go wrong has gone wrong in this particular Olympics. I mean, the weather. You know, yeah. I mean, even Lindsey Vonn, the man Cuso, the two skiers can't stand each other. You know, they're going at it this week. And now you hear about. Again, this has nothing to do with the Winter Olympics, but you have some Chinese gymnasts who were allegedly too young in Beijing. The Olympics are all connected. So when we have one bad story in the Olympics, it connects to Winter. It doesn't matter if it's Winter, Summer, or whatever. You know, if it finds a way to pile on. So the Olympics definitely needs a shot in the arm, and you have a chance to have that. Come tomorrow around 3:15 when the USA will take on Canada for the gold medal game. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call. 7 minutes after the 11:37 a.m. I'll do last part about Black History Profile. One of the great, you talk about one hit wonders. This was the definition of a one hit wonder. As this guy gave one of the great Super Bowl performances in NFL history, we'll talk about him and what he did and what he meant for the NFL. Also, NBA, had some NBA talk. Why a guy who averages 7 points and 5 rebounds may decide the NBA championship. And also, who is that team? Who is that team who's creeping up on the door of LA and Denver? We'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call. I'm your host, Samuel Quinn. Hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or Facebook or facebook.com/WilliamGerald. Hit me up and comment and drop any comments that you would may like, any opinions that you may like. I will try to respond to them as the best I can. Gatorade has ended its endorsement deal with Tiger Woods, joining the likes of Cashier, Accenture, Gillette, and AT&T, who also cut ties with Woods recently. We no longer see a role for Tiger in our marketing efforts. It has ended our relationship, a female Gatorade spokesman said. So, go figure. Tiger Woods goes out there and apologizes to his sponsors, which included Gatorade, and they still dropped him. So, I mean, I'm kind of surprised but not shocked about that decision. The U.S. men's hockey team scored 6 goals in the first 12 minutes in a 6-1 rout of Finland. The USA will play Canada in the gold medal game on Sunday. NBA scores. Dallas defeats Atlanta 111-103 in overtime. Dallas, this is 6th straight win. Cleveland in overtime over Toronto, 126-118. No Chris Bosh for that game. Chicago, 115. Portland number 11, again, in overtime, as Chicago continues to play well, have won eight out of their last nine games. Oklahoma City crushes Minnesota 109-92. Michael Westbrook. The guy who last hit is Westbrook, I can't remember his first name right now. He has a almost flourishing control of depth. He's been playing great, by the way. I mean, anybody talking about how good Kevin Durant is. Durant is tremendous, but Westbrook has been, you know, that team, he makes that team go. What he's done for the point guard position. Charlotte over Memphis, 93-89. Houston, 109. San Antonio, 103. Houston has three players that scored 30 points, and Kevin Martin, Aaron Brooks, and Louis Scola all cracked 30 points. So much for that San Antonio defense. San Antonio was finished. I mean, they had no shot to do anything in the playoffs. They looked like a team that's just old. I mean, they're like an old team right now. And they're going to be looking at one of those bottom seeds come playoff time. Phoenix crushes the Clippers. Phoenix playing well right now, 125-112. And the Knicks get a win over the Washington Wizards, 118-116. Sacramento over Utah, 103-99. Tyreek Evans continues to play great, 24. He outplayed Darren Williams big time as he goes for 24 points, 8 assists, and 7 rebounds. Tyreek Evans, he's a rookie of the year. And this rookie class has been very deep this year, but there's no question that Tyreek Evans is the rookie of the year. So we're Quinn on this little edition of the Saturday morning wake up call on the 27th of February 2010. And in the season, as you go back to the 1987 season, it will be remembered for number one being a strike shortened season. And that would be probably the first thing you remember for. But the last thing you will remember for is the second quarter. Super Bowl 22, which to me is, and again, I'm biased, of course, because I'm a fan of this team, the most explosive quarter in NFL history, offensive quarter in NFL history. You have the Washington Redskins just trouncing the Denver Broncos 42-10 in the glory days of the Redskins. I remember that game very well. First quarter, Elway comes out there, you know, throws, you know, 10-0, and you think Doug Williams, who is our Black History Profile of the Week, twists his ankle, and you say to yourself, oh my goodness, Jay Stray is coming on the field. We're going to get killed in this game. He comes back in the game, and again, and the ensuing drive that he came back off the injury, Jay Stray came in the game for a series, or for the last two plays of that particular series, got sacked, and, you know, Washington's defense tightened up, got the ball back. As soon as Doug Williams comes back, you know, they go on a drive, and again, it sets off, it ignites the most explosive quarter in NFL history. The Redskins put 35 points on the board in the second quarter, which still today has a Super Bowl record. Williams, you know, in that game, 18 for 29, 340 yards, 4 touchdown passes, no interceptions. At that point, he had records for touchdown passes and yards, which has been surpassed by the likes of, you know, Steve Jones, Joe Montana, and Kirk Warren, to name a few guys who have passed those records. But again, that was one of the great performances in Super Bowl history. Williams, the first Black quarterback, starting Black quarterback ever to win Super Bowl, and really, you know, if you go back to that time, there was such a stigma on Black quarterbacks. It was ridiculous. It was beyond ridiculous. I mean, you know, guys, you know, there were guys who could have been quarterbacks in the NFL and could have been starting quarterbacks in the NFL, Black starting quarterbacks in the NFL long before that, who didn't get the opportunity because of that ignorance of the NFL front office people not thinking that about that black athlete could be a quarterback. I mean, Warren Moon, Williams destroys that by winning the Super Bowl MVP and winning the Super Bowl championship that year, and then which opened the door for guys like Warren Moon, Randall Cunningham to go out there and play great. You know, if Warren Moon would have been in the NFL, you know, much sooner had, you know, had Williams came along earlier, or had a black quarterback come along earlier, and won a Super Bowl and had that kind of success. But again, Doug Williams was down in that game. Strange thing about Doug Williams, and I said that, I jokingly said one hit wonder. Well, he really wasn't one hit wonder, because after that game, he really, his career, he only played two more seasons with the Redskins, only played two more seasons with the Redskins. Really had a mediocre career when you look at his regular season, when you look at what he did in the regular season. After that, I mean, he only started, you know, after that particular game, in the 88 season, he started 10 games, was 4-6 as a starter, you know, 15 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. 89, which was his last year of professional football, he only started 2 games. I believe he was injured that particular season because he was listed as playing 4 games, only started 2. But for that one day, he was as good as any quarterback has ever been in the Super Bowl. And again, that was a historic performance from, you know, just in so many different ways beyond just the straight performance. I mean, again, opening the doors for black quarterbacks like you've seen in the past 15, 20 years, whether it be a Dominic McNabb, a Steve McNair, a Dante Culpepper, just to name a few. You know, he really was the first to go out there and really, you know, kick the door down. In that 87 season, where the Redskins won the Super Bowl, that strike shortened season, Williams only started 2 games, if you remember. Jay Strader was the quarterback. Strader got hurt. Williams started 2 games. He started 2 games. He was, of course, undefeated in the playoffs, played well enough to get the Redskins in the Super Bowl, but nobody had any idea that he would go out there and basically outplay, you know, a guy who's considered to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in John Elway. So Doug Williams is our Black History Profile of the Week. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll go inside the NBA, and we'll look at a guy who's taken a beating, but who is not, and I believe has not had a disappointing career. I'll talk about him. I'll talk about another guy, again, who may hold the balance of the NBA championship in his hands. And I'll talk about a team on the rise and a rookie who's been under the radar. All that on Inside the NBA still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Gatorade has ended its endorsement deal with Tiger Woods, joining the likes of Tad Heuer, Accenture, Gillette, and AT&T, who also ties with Woods. A Gatorade spokesman said, "We no longer see a role for Tiger in our marketing efforts, and have ended our relationship. Gatorade, of course, will still work with Woods in terms of with his foundation. But again, no Gatorade. Gary has ended his relationship with one Tiger Woods. The U.S. men's hockey team scored 6 goals in the first 12 minutes in a 6-1 rout of Finland. The USA will try to win its first gold medal since 1980 as they will take on Canada in the gold medal game on Sunday. NBA scores: Dallas wins its 6th straight game in overtime, 111-103 against Atlanta. Cleveland over Toronto, 126-118 in overtime. Chicago, 115-111 against Portland in overtime. Oklahoma City, 109, Minnesota, 92. Charlotte, 93, Memphis, 89. Houston, 109, San Antonio, 103. 3 different Houston players go for 30 points. Phoenix, 125, the Clippers, 112. New York, 118, Washington, 116, also in overtime, and the late game, Sacramento, 103, edged out Utah, 99, top big game out, rookie guard Tyreek Evans. Phil Quinn on the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 50 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. Of course, I will take you to the bottom half of the 12 o'clock hour, and the NBA, as we head past As we now pass, of course, the onside break, the NBA is on his playoff run, playoff stretch run, as teams are trying to jockey for position. And Tracy McGrady returned last week from a seemingly forever hiatus. I know he played a game in Houston in December with Houston, but he only had played in 6 games with Houston. Didn't like the playing time he was getting. Houston decided to make a move, made the right move, and of course he went to the Knicks. Had a big first game against Oklahoma City and a loss. And they lost, played well, 26 points, played extremely well. And has kind of slowed down since that two a game. He's only averaging about 8 points a game, but still trying to get back in basketball shape. McGrady has taken a beating as far as players going in terms of a game. I mean, you hear NBA guys and you hear these, quote unquote experts on television talk about, how he has underachieved, waste of talent. And when you look at what he's done in his career and look at his career overall, I don't know if it's me or, the guy has been all NBA 7 times, okay? First team twice, second team 3 times, third team twice, 7 times in the All-Star game. He has 17,000 points. Career averages about 22 points a game. And then you look at his playoff numbers. Well, he's never won a first-round playoff series. Playoffs, he's about 20.5, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. 7 assists, 6 rebounds. I don't know how you can really knock his career. I mean, do people expect him to be, Michael Jordan coming out of high school or Jerry West coming out of high school? When McGrady came out of high school out of Mount Zion and chose to go directly to the NBA, you knew he had talent. Yeah, you knew he had a lot of talent, but nobody expected him to be like the next transcendent. He didn't come in with LeBron James type hype, okay? Or he didn't come in even with Kevin Garnett type hype, or even Kobe Bryant type hype for that matter. McGrady came in kind of under the radar and snuck up on people at pre-draft workouts and what he did in that 1 year, in his senior year at Mount Zion High School. So I don't understand how he's been a waste of talent. If you want to knock McGrady, you can knock him for 2 things. Number one, you can knock him for not being durable. I mean, he's only played in 70 or more games 4 times in his career. He's lost seasons. When you add it all up, he's lost about 2 or 3 seasons of playing of basketball based on injuries. If you want to knock his durability, that's fine. But as far as his production, as far as what he's done on the court, I don't see how you can knock him too much. And people talk about the playoffs and when he's not done the playoffs, not getting past the first round, which to me is kind of ridiculous because really, there's only been one time where I say that his team was better than he was supposed to get past in the first round. That was 2007. Houston against Utah. Houston had home court advantage. Game 7 on their home floor and lost to Utah. You had to win that. If you have Tracy McGrady and Yao Ming on your team, even though Utah was a very good team at the time, you have to find a way to win that series. That's all there is to it. So you can knock him for that. Okay, knock him for that. But those other playoff series, his team was not the better team. And in the NBA, the best 4 out of 7, 9 out of 10 times, the better team is going to win that particular series. So I don't know how you knock McGrady from that aspect. Not being able to advance in the playoffs. But he's had some big playoff moments. Again, his numbers in the playoffs are better than his numbers in the regular season. And when you're looking at top playoff performers and you look at guys who come up big in the postseason, their numbers in the regular season are better than their numbers in the regular season. So, again, I think McGrady has taken too much of a beating. He's going to be a borderline Hall of Famer. If I had a vote to put him in the Hall of Fame, again, based on what his accomplishments and what he's done, and based, I would probably have to put McGrady in the Hall of Fame. It's going to be hard to keep a guy who, again, 7-time All-NBA is a lot. That's a lot of times being considered amongst the best players. It's not just seven times also. Being all NBA seven times a lot to keep a guy out of the Hall of Fame. Scoring about 17,000 points is a lot to keep a guy out of the Hall of Fame. To me, he's going to be borderline, but again, he is not. To me, I don't think he's underachieved at all in his career. I just think that he was placed on this pedestal that was, to me, unfair. And the second thing you can criticize him for, I failed to mention that, is him leaving Toronto. I mean, he never should have left Toronto. He should have signed there for the Mets, stayed with Vince Carter, and who knows, that team might have a chance for a championship. But he wanted to be the guy in Orlando. He found out when being a guy is not all what it's cracked up to be, as he had, you know, some hard years with Orlando where he was 40, 50 points, and they still lose the game because of, you know, Grant Hill not being healthy and them also not being able to land Tim Duncan in that particular year 2000 of, that free agent class. The rumors that Gaskins, of course, has been bought out of his contract by the Washington Wizards. Now, Gaskins now is free to go with any other team. He can sign with any team right now, other than the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, he can go to the Cavaliers on March 21st. He had to wait at least 30 days from the time that he was traded, which I think this move is just ridiculous. Because, I mean, it really defeats the whole purpose of the trade and manipulates the salary cap and the whole nine yards. So it's something I think they may have to look into in the offseason, but the rule is a rule right as it stands right now. But Gaskins, you know, only is averaging 7.5 points a game and 5 rebounds a game, he could put a team over the top. I mean, the right team lands him. You know, if you're their teams right now, Denver, Atlanta, Dallas, the Celtics, all are, Utah, all have interest in Gaskins, and rightfully so. He's a good guy, 7'3". He can stretch a defense with his shooting. He's he takes up a lot of space. He's just a smart player, good passer. He would fit into any system. He would fit to any, and he does not. He's not gonna bitch and moan about minutes. More than likely, he's gonna end up back in Cleveland. He has a home there. That's where his family is. But the Atlanta Hawks are getting there. A lot of teams that will love to have services of one. Gaskins. Also, again, you had Cleveland's playing better of late. They just smacked the Celtics on Thursday night. I can't put too much stock into that game other than to say the fact that, of course, you know, the Celtics cannot, I mean, obviously the Celtics can't do anything without the big three, without one of them, without all their big three cooking on all cylinders. No Paul Pierce, again, hard to gauge. That was a strange game as it was. Celtics dominated for the better part of the first half. Then Cleveland just went to another gear and blew the Celtics out of building. Again, I still think if you're a Cleveland fan, that is a team that in the playoffs, don't want to see, frankly, based on the matchup. Again, you put a healthy Paul Pierce in the lineup, and they can cause some serious matchup problems for Cleveland. But again, you have to favor Cleveland in that series, the way they're playing right now, and the fact that the Celtics just have not been able to put it together for a substantial amount of time over the course of this season. My team of the week, the Dallas Mavericks. How about those Mavericks? 6-0 their last six games. The trade has helped them. You know, from the standpoint of Haywood, giving them an inside presence, blocking shots, rebounding. And Jason Kidd is playing out of his mind. Jason Kidd has a triple-double last night. Becomes the first player since he did it 1996 ago to have scored at least 15 points, 15 rebounds, and 15 assists. Within that triple-double, Kidd's playing out of his mind. Dirk Nowitzki's been Dirk Nowitzki. And this has been without basically the services of Caron Butler. They had a great win earlier this week against the Lakers without Caron Butler in Dallas. They're going to be a team that, you know, you put the pecking order in the Western Conference, you put, you know, L.A., Denver, and to me, Dallas is the third best team in the Western Conference right now. And right now, Dallas will be in third place, and which is a good place. That is actually a good place to be if you're the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, they're going to be battling Denver for that second spot. But if you can get second or third place, you can avoid, that means you're avoiding the Lakers until the conference finals. where you don't want to be is you don't want to be in eighth or fourth place. The eighth spot is basically the sacrificial lamb, first round against the Lakers. And the fourth spot, you would have to play the Lakers in the second round. So, you get you're in that sixth spot, you're in that second or third spot. Those are good places to be as far as if you are in the Western Conference. But Gaffney is playing very good. Jason Terry, coming off the bench, he can give you 25 to 30 any night. He's still coming off that bench. They have a lot of weapons with that team. Very interesting to watch as the course of the season goes along. Everybody's talking about, as far as the rookies goes, and rightfully so, Tariq Evans, who is a different rookie of the year right now. I don't think it's any debate, any question. It's like, he's going to do something that is historic. He's going to be 25 and 5, okay? 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. That's Michael Jordan. That's LeBron James. That's Jerry West, Oscar Robertson type numbers for rookies. It does not happen every year in terms of rookie coming in for those kind of numbers. And this has been a very deep rookie class, to say the least. But to me, the most underrated rookie and a guy who has had arguably the biggest impact as far as the team making playoffs possibly is Darren Collison. Darren Collison has kept New Orleans above water. They're still rough. They are still in the playoff hunt. They're in ninth place right now, trailing Portland. Chris Paul will be coming back maybe in another week or so. He's already started practicing a little bit. Collison had a great month of February. Certainly probably going to be rookie of the month of February. He went 21 points, 9 assists, and basically 4 rebounds. And that guy is a starting NBA point guard. Now, he's not a starting point guard on that team with Chris Paul. He's not Chris Paul, okay? But, Chris Paul is the best point guard in the league. But Darren Collison, to me, he's been great. In the games that Chris Paul has not played, Collison has been, out of this world. And he's going to be a starting point guard somewhere. This guy, he's not a backup point guard. He's not a Howard Ivey. He's not Anthony Carter. He's not some of these backup point guards that are very good, that can spot start. You have a starter that's injured. No. This guy is a legit starting point guard. And what it is, and he's not going to be in New Orleans. He's going to pick up with some team and do a good job for him somewhere else. And you wonder if you're New Orleans, they're going to have some decisions to make. If they can't, afford, they feel like they can't re-sign Chris Paul because Chris Paul is about to leave. Don't be surprised if, next year if Chris Paul, the following year if they can't afford to stay there if Chris Paul is traded. So that'd be something to keep your eyes on as far as the NBA goes. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. What happened? We'll go inside college basketball. What has happened to the ACC and a number one seed on the line up in New York? We'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. Gatorade has ended its endorsement deal with Tiger Woods, joining the likes of Tag Heuer, Accenture, Gillette, and AT&T. And Gatorade spokeswoman said, "We no longer see a role for Tiger in our marketing efforts and have ended our relationship and continue to do some work with Woods and his foundation." But again, the endorsement deal with Tiger Woods is over as far as Gatorade is concerned. The U.S. men's hockey team scored 6 goals in the first 12 minutes in a 6-1 rout of Finland. The USA will play tomorrow against the home team, Canada. Canada defeated Slovakia 3-2 in a game that was closer than many people thought it was going to be. NBA scores: Dallas over gets his 6th straight win, defeating Atlanta 111-103. Cleveland 126, Toronto 118 in overtime. No Chris Bosh in that game. Cleveland wins its 3rd straight. Chicago over Portland, 115-111 in overtime. Oklahoma City, 109, Minnesota, 92. They snapped their 2-game losing streak. Russell Westbrook floats for the triple-double in that game. Charlotte, 93-89. Houston, 109, San Antonio, 103. Houston has 3 players. Brooks Kevin Martin and Louis Scola all scored 30 points. Phoenix 125, the Clippers 112, the Knicks 118, Washington 116 in overtime, and Sacramento edges Utah 103-90-299. Tariq Evans, big game out of him. In the year 1995, with the Duke program on the ropes, Mike Krzyzewski was, of course, sick. Duke was awful that year. Didn't make the NCAA tournament and was basically a other, for the exception of a Jeff Capel half-court shot that sent a classic Duke Unified game into double overtime. Duke was not, again, was not relevant for that particular year. But you still, in the ACC, in that particular year, you have North Carolina, Maryland, Wake Forest, Virginia, and Georgia Tech. All very good teams. That year, you have four of those teams going to the Sweet 16. North Carolina and Virginia and Wake Forest were in the Elite Eight. North Carolina went to the Final Four before they lost to Arkansas. And you had players, you know, Tim Duncan, Joe Smith, Rasheed Wallace, Jerry Stackhouse, James Forrest, you know, Harold Dean, Curtis Staples. I mean, you had a lot of talent in the ACC in that particular season. And again, this is when Duke was a non-factor for that particular year. Now, you know, now you look at the ACC 15 years later, and, you know, the ACC right now does not have a Final Four team in it. And in recent memory, in recent years, the last 4 or 5 years, in North Carolina, has not been a championship caliber team, the ACC hasn't sniffed a Final Four or a national championship. Right now, the ACC Duke has a chance, has a very good chance now to get a number one seed, especially with Purdue losing Robbie Hummel, who's out for the season with that ACL. Maybe those Purdue chances to win a national championship down the drain. But Duke is not one of the top 4 or 5 teams in the conference. I mean, in the country. If I'm a team who wasn't going to get a number one seed and Duke's going to get a number one seed, I would want to be in the same bracket as Duke as a number two seed. Because they were clearly, when you look at the other three teams that are probably going to be number one seed, they would clearly, by far and away, be the weakest number one seed. And you wonder what has happened to the ACC. I mean, this particular area, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, is producing better talent than ever. I mean, recent years, you know, Kevin Durant, Michael Beasley, Ty Lawson, Austin Freeman, just to name a few players that came out of this particular area. Just to name a few. But yet the ACC, other than North Carolina, who's been awful this year, somehow can't get their hands on these talented on this talent laden area. I mean, it used to be that teams like Georgia Tech can go anywhere in recruit. Georgia Tech, I mean, Stephon Marbury, you know, Bobby Clemens used to have a pipeline to get New York City point guards. Stephon Marbury, Kenny Anderson, to name a few. Now, I mean, to me, it comes down to a couple of things. Number one, the coaches aren't as good. I mean, you look at the ACC during that particular time, the late Dave Odom for Wake Forest, very good coach, underrated, very good. Of course, Pete Gillen passed away from Wake Forest. But Dave Odom was a very good coach for Wake Forest, very underrated. Of course, then you still have Dave Smith, Mike Krzyzewski. Not much has changed from that point. I mean, Boyd Williams has won 2 national championships. Mike Krzyzewski is still there. Bobby Clemens, excellent coach at Georgia Tech. You know, you have coaches in these teams, in these lower ACC teams who are very good. Gary Williams, it's the same coach, but is it really the same coach? I mean, Gary Williams in 1995, you could say 2002 was great. Gary Williams in 2010, that not so great. So it's not even the same. It's the same coach, but it's been different results for Maryland. You know, these coaches, the coaches were better. They had the talent. The talent pool was better. I mean, the ACC right now probably will get four to six teams going to the NCAA tournament. One of them might make it to the Elite Eight. One, Duke, it might, Duke, and that's it. Anybody else besides Duke that makes it to the Elite Eight out of the ACC, to me, is a major shock. And if you took Duke out of the ACC and put Duke in the Big East, Duke is no better than a number two seed, a number five team in the Big East. Not as good as Syracuse, not as good as Villanova, they're not as good as Georgetown. You know, they'll be battling with the likes of, say, West Virginia. So, the ACC has really came to hard times. And again, I don't know how much of it the expansion has had to do with it. Boston College, Miami, Florida. I don't think that's had, if they have kind of taken away from the tradition as far as the ACC being the ACC, where it was, all the teams were from the Atlantic Coast. You have a team from a New England state, or a team from the SEC territory in Miami coming up there. But why these coaches aren't able to get the type of talent that they once did, again, is a mystery to me, because there is talent. And especially now that you have this rule where kids can't come straight out of high school, where they have to go, they have to be at least 1 year removed from high school before they enter the NBA, you would figure that would lead to more talented players coming into the ACC. But there is no longer a guarantee that 8-8 gets an ACC team into the NCAA tournament. There was a time when if you were minimum 8-8, you were getting to the NCAA tournament from the ACC. There was no question about it. Now that is no longer the case. A team could be 9-7 this year and not make it to the NCAA tournament coming out of the ACC. Big game in college basketball court this weekend tonight. Syracuse takes on host Villanova. It is expected to have a record crowd in terms of on-campus facilities, 34,000. Syracuse already holds the record for that. Syracuse comes in the game ranked number 4. Villanova is number 8, and depending on which poll you look at, number 8, the coach is number 7, the Associated Press. Syracuse can lock up a number 1 seed with the player. I still think they're going to be a number 1 seed anyway, but they can absolutely lock up a number 1 seed and also the Big East Championship unofficially with a win. They're 13-2 in the conference. Villanova's 12-3. Villanova has to win this game to me to have any shot at winning the Big East and also possibly getting a number 1 seed. I think Syracuse is the better team. They've been the best team in the Big East all year long. And to me, with Purdue's misfortune with the Hummel injury, there's currently one open number 1 spot as far as the number 1 seeds goes. 3 of them to me are locked up. I think Kentucky and Kansas, Kentucky are locks. I think Syracuse is a 4-line lock, basically, as number 1 seed. But that last number 1 seed, I mean, Duke is right there. Kansas State is right there. Villanova is right there as far as teams who possibly can get that last number 1 seed. And to me, there's a drop-off. After you get past Kansas, Syracuse, and Kentucky, there's a drop-off to me as far as that fourth number 1 seed goes. So, Syracuse tonight taking on Villanova. Villanova messes up pretty well with Syracuse being up to it because they have great guards. They have guys that can back down threes against that 2-3 zone. It should be a very interesting game to watch. Syracuse has not lost to a ranked opponent this season. Undefeated. They, remember, the two games they lost, they're 26-2. Two games they lost being the Louisville and Pittsburgh, ironically, at home, which is a shock. They also undefeated on the road. So they have really played great against ranked competition and against Angus and on the road. So I look for Syracuse to win this game. Should be a very good game. Looking forward to it. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call. We will look ahead, we'll take our first taste of the baseball season, look at a team that hopes to compete for a world championship and challenge the Yankees and regain their AL East crown. And we'll also look back at the top of the show. Can the USA shock Canada? We'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Gatorade has ended its endorsement deal with Tiger Woods, joining the likes of Tag Heuer, Accenture, Gillette, and AT&T. We no longer see a role for Tiger in our marketing efforts and have ended our relationship. The U.S. men's hockey team scored 6 goals in the first 12 minutes in a 6-1 rout of Finland. The USA will play Canada tomorrow in the gold medal game. Canada defeated Slovakia 3-2. NBA scores: Dallas 111, Atlanta 103. Dallas gets his 6th straight win. Jason Kidd had a triple-double. Dirk Nowitzki scored 37 points. Cleveland 126, Toronto 118 in overtime. Chicago 115, Portland 111 in overtime. Oklahoma City 109, Minnesota 92. Charlotte 93, Memphis 89. Houston over San Antonio 109-103. Houston has 3 players with 30 points, at least 30 points. Phoenix 125, LA Clippers, that is, 112. The Lakers over the Sixers 99-90. The Knicks defeat the Wizards 118-116. Sacramento 103, Utah 99. Big game on Tyreek Evans. The Boston Red Sox are looking to get back to the World Series and looking to get back to the World Series, which they won back in 2007. Last year, of course, ended in a 3-game sweep against the Los Angeles Angels, where they blew a lead to Wakefield for the first time in his career. You know, blows a save in the playoffs. That Red Sox team was very good, but was not a vintage Red Sox team that we've been accustomed to seeing in the past 3 or 4 years. They come into the season with some major upgrades. Number one, getting John Lackey. Lackey gives them, to me, the best starting pitching staff in baseball. When you talk about Beckett, Lester, Lackey as number 3, Dice K, Clay Buchholz, and Tim Wakefield is basically your 6th starter, and you can use him as a spot starter, save him up for the postseason. You know, he's 40 years old, 41 years old. I mean, he's still pitching well for, I mean, he goes 11-5 last year, still pitching well. So, again, to me, they still have Papelbon coming out of the bullpen. Guys like that, Josh Bard, Manny Del Carmen. But to me, the big question for the Red Sox, again, I know they upgraded their defense, getting Mike Cameron, Adrian Beltre, you know, moving Adrian Beltre. They move the center fielder to left field. They move him to left field. Again, that defense is going to be very good. But to me, there's a couple of questions about the Red Sox. Number one is David Ortiz. I mean, we know he doesn't have much left in the tank, but can he give them at least another 1 year? Can he be 270, 30, and 100? Last year, he had 28 home runs, 99 RBI, was just 238, did nothing in the postseason. Can they get enough offense? I mean, they have guys who are, they lose Jason Bay. They'll have Victor Martinez for a full season, which will help out a lot. Veritek is coming off a very good year. Can the top of their lineup bounce back off okay years? You had guys come back down to earth from last year with that lineup, and that was the Red Sox problem. They just could not score. They were not. You had trouble scoring as far as offensively, trouble keeping up with the Yankees, who have obviously a ridiculous offense. But I mean, they don't need to match the Yankees back to back. If their defense is shored up and they've had the great pitching, that is a question: can their defense and pitching compensate enough for what they don't do offensively? And again, they need Kevin Youkilis, and Dustin Pedroia. They need those guys to bounce back to 2007 form, or 2008 form. Pedroia was the MVP. Youkilis was great. finished the top five MVP as well. Last year, those guys came back down to earth in a major way, had okay years, but disappointing compared to what they had been doing in the previous seasons. I think Boston, again, I think that pitching staff is going to be scary. I think they'll be right there. I think they'll be right there with the Yankees in terms of competing for the division. I think they'll make the playoffs and be one of the handful of teams that can make it to a World Series. Because again, I don't know if they have enough offense to win a championship, but again, if they can get anything out of Ortiz, Adrian Beltre, and Mike Cameron offensively, those guys, I mean, we know what they can do defensively, but those guys, especially Cameron Beltre, give them anything offensively, then look out for this team, because we know the pitching defense is going to be there as far as the Red Sox goes. But again, they're going to be right there with the Yankees. Remember the Yankees have lost Johnny Damon. They've lost Hideki Matsui. Maybe that takes away from their offense just a bit. They're going to have A-Rod for the rest of the season for the entire season, which will certainly help. So, but maybe, you know, the Yankees' offense comes back down to earth just a little bit. So we'll see. That's going to be a great race come in the AL East. And again, spring training starts up on Monday. You will have your first, starts up on this week coming up. You have some spring training games. And again, the season will open April 4th, Yankees and Red Sox in a primetime game on ESPN. Still to come on this final segment of the Saturday morning wake-up call. Can the USA shock Canada? And which one of these running backs would you sign? Which one of the recently cut running backs would you take a chance on? We'll talk about that and much, much more still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. Gatorade has ended its endorsement deal with Tiger Woods, joining the likes of Tag Heuer, Accenture, Gillette, and AT&T. We no longer see a role for Tiger in our marketing efforts and have ended our relationship, a Gatorade Women's spokesman said. They still will continue to work with Woods' foundation. The U.S. men's hockey team scored 6 goals in the first 12 minutes in a 6-1 rout of Finland. The USA is gunning for his first gold medal since the 1980 Olympics, of course, in Lake Placid. NBA scores Dallas over Atlanta, 111-103. Dallas gets in overtime. Dallas gets his 6th straight win. Cleveland, 126. Toronto, 118 in overtime. Chicago, 115. Portland, 111 in overtime. Oklahoma City, 109. Minnesota, 92. Charlotte, 93. Memphis, 89. Houston, 109. San Antonio, 103. Phoenix, 125. The Clippers, 112. The Knicks, 118. Washington, 116 in overtime. And Sacramento, the Lakers, 99. The Lakers, 99. Philadelphia, 90. Sacramento gets by Utah, 103-99. Of course, we began the program talking about the Olympics and just how big of a disappointment they have been. And just how, again, some of it is bad luck. Some of it is bad luck as far as, you know, the tragedy with the loser dying, and basically, you know, before the Olympics even started, you know, on a training run. And some of it has been, frankly, just self-induced. Not being able to, you know, with the snow, the whole snow situation, you had a lot of skiers complaining about the quality of the snow. You had the women's Canadian team. You're supposed to be representing your country, but you're out there celebrating a gold medal, you know, sipping, drinking beer and with cigars in your mouth. That's a funny situation because, you know, you have girls, and you have some 19, 20-year-old girls who are not even old enough to drink, drinking beer on the ice. Where's the coach in this situation saying, girls, get back in the locker room? Where's the purpose of your coach or your coaching staff to let a lot of these girls to go out there and act like this? Now, within the locker room, I don't care. When you talk about a sports celebration, I don't care what goes on within the locker room. For all I care, they could have had a male stripper. I mean, seriously, what happens in the locker room is a sacred place for the players, athletes. Whatever happens in the locker room happens in the locker room. That's legal. You know, don't bring guns to the locker room. Give a reading to Boss Trenton and bring guns there. But as far as celebrations goes, I could absolutely care less what happens in the locker room. But when you come out in front of thousands of people and millions of people watching for at home, you know, drinking beer on the ice, I don't see how the coaching staff could have allowed them to come out there and, you know, act that way. And I mean, and again, some of these girls are teenagers, some of these girls are very young. I mean, they've obviously been through a lot as far as winning the gold medal and that they represent their country, but again, I'm just glad it wasn't America, put you that way. If you would have just, America would have got just buried by everybody else around the world, including our own media, had that happen. So you've had that. You've had Lindsey Vonn being, to me, a disappointment as far as the Olympics have gone. Lindsey Vonn came in here, you know, with all this hype. I understand he has won a gold medal, won two medals, a gold and a bronze, but he hasn't finished in the other three races. He has not finished. He hasn't finished in the other three races. I mean, not forget about finishing last. He has not finished. You know, she cost Julia Mancuso a possible medal when she had a crash on Wednesday and broke her pinky, and Mancuso, that messes Mancuso and her time up. So overall, these Olympics, again, to me, have been a disaster. It's been an utter disaster. And nobody at all is into the Olympics right now. I mean, nobody's into it. I mean, did anybody know that Chad Hedrick is going to win 5 medals as a speed skater? Did anybody know that? Long track, short track would be like Shawnee Davis. Did anybody know that? I don't think anybody knew that, other than somebody who was just, you know, cover sports and been covering the Olympics. But come Sunday, you will get, you know, the Olympics will end on a positive note. Win or lose, I mean, for the U.S., if the U.S. wins, it's great for the Americans. The Americans will love it. If Canada wins, of course, Canada, Vancouver has something to smile about watching their home team win a gold medal. All the pressure, 100% pressure is on Canada. They're the better team. They're at home. They have the more physical players. They should win the game. I know USA beat them the first time last Sunday. That was a game where Canada played some sloppy hockey. USA took advantage of it and won 5-3. USA is going to have to play a much better defensive game than they expect to beat Canada this time around. Canada had 45 shots on goal. I know Ryan Miller has stood on his head, but you cannot laugh. Can't give a team that many offensive weapons 45 shots. I mean, he gives them 45 shots tomorrow. It might be 7-3, 7-2, going the other way. So I expect a very close game. I think Canada probably is the better team and probably will win the game. Get hard to beat a team like that 2 times in a row. Twice in a week span. But again, nobody would not be any shocked or surprised if the USA goes out there and wins the gold medal for the first time since 1980. So looking forward to it. That will again cap off the Olympics. This cannot end soon enough from my standpoint. Enjoy your week. I will be back next week. Next week we will head full steam ahead into March Madness. We'll just come a week away from Selection Sunday. We'll talk about the conference tournaments. We'll talk about some bubble teams. And we'll also, of course, get into some more baseball. Baseball spring training is being kicked off.